Good afternoon, Codmasters. How are you doing, Dave?
Doing all right, mate. You good?
Yeah, you ask that question all the time now, don't you?
I ask everybody that, but sometimes I fail to ask you because you always lead, you always come in, how you do, you know, and then everybody forgets about you. So now I'm making a conscious effort to make sure Andy is all right.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Something we spoke about in our last episode was about everybody says, I'm all right. But how you say all right is actually how you feel, isn't it? I'm all right. Yeah, that song up there, as opposed to I'm all right.
But you're not really all right. I'm all right.
Said it all. I'd love to hear from Phil right now. Tell Dave, what's going on with Phil? Is he all right?
Phil's full tilt, doing what he's doing from a work perspective, and rather adding a bit more of additional stress into it. We said, Phil, don't worry about it. We will field this. We will sort it. We will represent. We will make you proud, my friend. And we also thought, do you know what? Could we get somebody else to come and join us? Who could that individual be? And I thought, I might have the man here.
It's got to be somebody amazing.
I might have the man. You know, he's got a good beard. He always likes a good bobble hat like myself. And I thought, I wonder what Mr. Luke Staton's doing. And he said, you know what, Dave? I'm available. So here he is, Mr. Luke. How are you, geezer?
I'm very well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to come and talk COD with you guys.
Nice to meet you, Luke.
You too, Andy. It's interesting when you're talking about Phil. It just triggered a story in my mind that I don't know if anybody's watching this on video or listening to it, but when I take the hat off, there is nothing under there other than flesh. So when I was in my mid-20s, when I was playing semi-professional football at that point, and I always remember, you know, when your hair's starting to fade, and I always, as a kid, from the age of 15, I used to shave it off anyway because I was playing sports so much that having a shower and 2-3 showers a day, I just used to shave it off because I knew who I was from a young age that, you know, I'm no Brad Pitt, so why be so bothered about what my hair looks like? Just accept who you are and be the best you can with what you've got. So my hair came off very young. And I remember in my mid-20s, it's, you know, it wasn't available to grow back anymore. And every time I used to go to my nan's house, my nan used to say, Luke, I wish you'd grow your hair back because you've got such lovely hair. And my brother used to say, Nan, he can't grow it back. And this one particular game I was playing for Gainsborough Trinity at the time, and I pulled up in my car and I'd probably gone probably a week and a half without shaving my head. And when you do that, when you haven't got much hair, it comes back random, doesn't it? Really random.
Does it?
And as I pulled up in my car, and in front of me was two of my teammates, both Leeds and Bradford boys. Like, there was hilarious guys, and we used to have such great camaraderie in the dressing room. And as I pulled up in my car, I saw them both looking straight on at me in their car, and we parked up and they was both crying with laughter, like, and I'm thinking, what are they laughing at? Like, what are they laughing at? And we walked through to the changing rooms. I'm like, guys, you're gonna let me in on the joke? And he said as we pulled up, one of the lads said to the other guy, he said, check out Phil Collins. Because remember, Phil Collins had that thing at the front.
Yeah,
just that little,
yeah, I do.
That nickname stayed with me. And it was just one of those moments that when you're with a group of guys, those sorts of witty comments just come out. And it, no matter what you're thinking or feeling, and I guess a big purpose of your Talking COD podcast is around supporting people through challenges, trials, tribulations, overcoming adversity, sharing stories. And there's no better medicine, I believe, than having a bit of fun and a bit of a laugh and a joke at yourself a lot of the time, yourself. And that humour often just breaks the whole feel. And all of a sudden you think to yourself, I weren't feeling too good early, but I feel good now. I wonder what's changed. And all that's changed is that you've shifted your energy, haven't you? And that's all that's happened. So I can be called Phil today if you want me to. I'm cool with that.
Phil, open brackets, Collins, close brackets. So just a note on that. You played semi-professional football. You also played professional football, and you played for England as well, didn't you? So you definitely put a shift in there.
So Luke, I've been studying your website. It's a cracking website. I don't know who did that for you, but it's a very professional job, I would like to say. And on there, there's some videos of you speaking publicly to younger people. What's that all about?
So yeah, many years ago, kind of like David said, there I was a young professional football player. I was very, very fortunate, really. I played for England when I was 15, 16, 17 and 18 with some household names that anybody that's involved in sport would have heard of and know of. And when that come crashing down in my early 20s, it was like, hey, what am I going to do? Because if you only do one thing your whole life, and back then you was encouraged to just do one thing really well. It's like the Jim Collins hedgehog theory that all the hedgehog's got to do is curl up in a ball. If he does that really, really well and becomes a master at that, he'll do well. And back then when I was a kid, the philosophy was put everything that you've got into your sport. And I never focused on school because, number one, I found school very difficult from a attention span. I couldn't sit still and just really, I didn't really understand what I was meant to be doing. It was just, I loved having fun. So I was constantly having fun with my mates in the classroom, distracted, couldn't wait till lunchtime for the kickabout with the jumpers as the goalposts and all of that thing. And as I went off to be a young professional footballer, you know, I had the actual dream start to football, really, because at 14, I left home, lived with another group of guys that was all pursuing the same dream. So I was playing for England at Wembley Stadium, 15 years of age, in front of a stadium full of people, parents there, just magical. And everything went my way. So from the age of 14 or even younger, everything went my way. I got picked for every England team. I got a 4-year professional contract at the Premier League Champions. I always felt wanted. I always felt loved. I always felt cared about because that's how people make you feel when you're an asset to them. And at that point, I was a phenomenal asset because they're seeing me as the next big thing. And all of a sudden, I get to 19 and I get told, we don't want you anymore, son. It was like the first time I've been told in my life that somebody didn't want me. And it was a real difficult thing to face that rejection. It's like people that, you know, and this isn't just sport, but it's like a relationship or a friendship that a group of friends that you thought you had also all of a sudden they actually aren't the friends that you thought, or the relationship, your partner cheats on you. It felt like that feeling. And I went from one club to the next and my career was over by the time I was in my early 20s professionally. And I didn't really know how to overcome that because I'd never overcome anything before. And back then, 24 years ago, you didn't go to your mum and dad and say, do you know what, Dad, I'm struggling with this. Like, I feel like really upset and I feel angry and I feel like I've let you down, Dad, and I love you and I'm devastated that it's not worked. Because I was, in my mind, not my mum and dad's mind, in my mind, I wanted to be the one that transformed their life. I wanted to buy that house back for them that we had to sell because we couldn't afford to live there. And that was like that. That tenacity still drives me today, by the way. It did 20 years, but that's my motive now. That still drives me. And all of a sudden, you're realizing that your car's got to go back. I'm back in the small bedroom that I lived in as a kid with the black and white television. And I'm now in my mid-20s with no GCSEs, no previous work experience other than playing football. And I'm on a building site shifting bricks for minimum wage and working in an animal food factory. And every day I had to walk through that door and look at my mum and dad and just like, even though they never said anything, it makes me emotional to talk about because you should walk through that door. And, you know, I felt that their pain that they felt seeing the son that they loved so much going through what he was going through used to really affect me because I'm like, they're going to Wembley Stadium to watch their son play. He's in all the local papers. He's the next big star. Then everywhere you went, people locally would say, what's happened? What happened to Luke? Yeah. Weren't he a professional football player? Weren't he this? So I had to walk down my own street and get the questions of what happened? Mm-hmm. And I was very honest with people. You know, I was never one of those to say, you know, loads of easy ways to go, oh, I had a bad injury and all that BS. But my dad always said to me as a kid, he said, son, if you're good enough, you're making it. If you're not, you won't. That is as black and white and as simple as it is. And because I didn't make it, I was just like, I weren't good enough. And people go, yeah, but you were. One manager left and the next manager didn't want you. And you did have lots of injuries. Yeah, I know. But so do lots of other people too. Because if you blame other people and you looked at blame external factors, injury, managers didn't like me, all of that stuff, you never look in the mirror and you never develop and you never grow. One thing I was always good at because I was brought up with such a top class family that was very real and honest. And sometimes very honest to the point that you just didn't want to hear it, that I would be told, and not in a very diplomatic way at times. So I was used to being spoken to in a way that, son, tonight you was terrible. And if you keep doing that, you're never going to get anywhere. And as painful as it is, you accept it. So I accepted from an early age, right, I'm not good enough. I've not made it. Now, that definitely does not mean that I've got to accept a life that I'm unhappy with, because I remember it so vividly when I talk to guys like you now about it. I can remember the photographic mind that I've got of seeing where I was when I had these thoughts. And I can remember shifting bricks on this building site, freezing cold. I had so many clothes on. I looked like the Michelin man. And I'm shifting these bricks all day. And as I'm shifting the bricks, I just thought to myself, as my nan stood in front of those goalposts, freezing cold in the mud, for me to take penalties at her and for her grandson to accept a life that he's unhappy with. Now, there's nothing wrong with the job of labouring on a building site, but it wasn't for me. And as I'm shifting the bricks, I'm like, you know, there is no way my nan's made those sacrifices for me to just accept this. And the guy used to pick me up every day. I always remember him called Duncan Cook. He used to pick me up at the end of the street. I had the plastic carrier bag with your pack-up box, something that I never thought I'd be doing. And only a few years before, I was playing for England at 18. I was playing the Champions League at 21 for a team in Wales, Barry Town, in front of 70,000 people against Porto. And this guy's picking me up at the end of the street. And I've got this plastic carrier bag. And I remember getting in his van, blue VW van. I always remember it. And as I got in, he used to always have the same hat, the same fleece on every day. And he never spoke to me in the morning because he was miserable, because he hated what he did.
So
as I got in the car next to him, I was like, I got in the car next to him. I'd look at him and say, I go, morning, Dunk. And he'd just look at me and tell me to F off. That was his first hello. He'd go, F off, shut up. And I was like, okay. And I remember Oasis had brought a song out at that particular time. I can't remember the name of the song. You guys probably remember better than me, but it said something like in the song, the wheels of his life have fallen off. And every time that kept coming on, he kept turning it up. And he said, this is your song, this, Luke.
Oh,
and
man.
I used to just laugh at it. Like, fuck. You know, I used to laugh. And he used to say to me, he said, Luke, he said, a few years ago, I came to watch you for England under 18s with Michael Owen, Wes Brown, all of these superstars. He said, now I'm picking you up at the end of the street with your plastic carrier bag, your pack-up box. He said, what's happened? And it was all in light-hearted jest. And when we're talking about banter and we're talking about things, he's saying that to me, and I was very resilient. I was in a place that, you know, I'd probably lost the will a little bit of life, I've got to be honest. It was like nothing could touch me because I thought, well, yeah, I'm not that bothered about life, really. What I've been through, what I'm doing now, this is shit, really. And I just thought, I'm not bothered. People say what they want. It just bounced off me. And I was sort of shifting bricks. It was just like that moment about my nan. It was like, she used to stand in those goalposts. I used to whiz penalties at her. And I didn't realize back then, obviously, when, you know, she was old and she came to every match that I played in. She stood in the wind and the rain and the snow. She went everywhere. And every time she got in the car, she'd say, Luke, have you remembered your boots and your pads? And I used to get out and check. And so I'm like, I'm not happy with this because I wanted to avoid going and seeing my nan because of the shame that I felt because of how my life had changed. And through that window there of a period of time, it wasn't until over many, many years that I started to want to see people again because I was proud of what I was now doing. And that's when I realized very young that it's not what you do that's important. It's who you are. And I thought people was proud of me because I was a footballer, but they was proud of me because I was a good person. That's what they was proud of. And the football was just a nice thing. It was a great thing. And the answer to your question, why did I want to talk to young people, is because I do not want young people to attach their personal identity to fame, money, or things. I want people to have the opportunity to attach their personal identity to being an absolute phenomenal person that's a relentless individual that goes out there and gets everything that they want if they want it. And I can help them do that. So that's why I start to speak to young people, because I didn't want them attaching themselves to, if I don't have that, I'm nothing. Because when you stripped away Luke Staton's football, I was just this lost kid, insecure, uncomfortable, didn't know how to communicate because I lived behind the football. Wherever you went, people would just say, he's the footballer, and you felt like, yes, look at me. Everybody knows who I am and everybody wants to talk to me. I've got a new car at 17. And it's all BS, really, because really beneath the surface, there was no foundations there, because that foundations hadn't been through anything to be able to build the empire of a great human being, because I'd not been through anything that had challenged me enough. So I want to make sure, Andy, that young people, I work with businesses too, same message, same philosophy. I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business people, big corporate organizations. And my philosophy is always be a phenomenal human being and everything will build from that. The skills of selling, the skills of communicating, you can teach all of that. But if you're unhappy in something in yourself, it's often because you're not happy with who you see in the mirror. So you avoid those conversations, but we have to have those conversations. And I had them. And once I had them, nobody could touch me. Nobody could ever come out and say anything about me. And I'm like worried about it. I'm like, I'm cool because everything about me is there. There's nothing. So I'm totally comfortable with everything that I do is with the intention of making a difference to other people. And if people don't like it, I'm fine with it.
I like that. I mean, there's a lot in that. It was a long answer to a short question, wasn't it, to be fair?
It's a very, do you know what? It's an incredible answer. And there's parts of that that made me tingle. You know, Dave got the tingle on. I'm like,
yeah,
holy shit, man. That's awesome.
There's so much in that. I mean, sacrifice, parents' pain, that really hit me there, because I think, you know, as children to, you know, to our parents, the last thing we want to do is to put them through any kind of pain and feel the shame of letting them down, I think. I think for me, that's one of the drivers, I think, what drove me to destruction at one point in my life, where I can't let my parents down. I'm actually doing it for the wrong reasons now. And I think that's really, really important. But it's not just young people, is it? It's people in business, as you say, Luke. So that, you know, it's not what you do, it's who you are. We've probably all done quite a bit of networking in business circles in the past. And one of the first questions you get asked is, what do you do? It's like, it's not about who you are as an individual or, you know, what are your values, or are you a nice person or you're a complete wanker? It doesn't matter. All I'm bothered about is, can I do business with you? You know, and for me, that's like, it's so shallow at times. Is that something you've come across as well, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, I can associate with lots of things that you're talking about there. You know, I guess from a parent's perspective, you know, I've got two boys that play a lot of football that are doing all right in football, but it's not easy for them. But I'll constantly say to them, that's all right. It's okay for it not to be easy. Some will work, some won't. But the things that you're experiencing are going to make you stronger. So if you do continue to climb and you get, you know, all of a sudden you come up against a cliff face or you drop off it, you'll have learned and developed some skills and hacks to deal with that, you know. And I guess from our perspective as well, you know, going back to the middle age, being middle-aged, it's we've had a lot of experiences over those years, good and bad. And I used to look back on the bad ones with like hatred. Now I look back on them as a learning curve. And on a daily basis, I have a toolbox of just hacks that I use. It's like you open them up, and these are hacks that I'm using based on experiences, you know, to try and get me through it. And whenever I see you, Luke, you know, out and about doing what you're doing, sometimes you do remind me a little bit of me, because everything always looks super positive and everything's like, you know, but to get to that stage and to be constantly, because you get knocked back, you know, life's constantly trying to bring you down, but it's that appreciation for what you have, the little basic things that you're appreciating, you know, from that you need to remember. And then obviously you've got the life hacks that you're using to keep going, and you want to be as optimistic as possible. But I can genuinely say I'm pretty decent at that. And I think you're pretty decent at that from what you see on the outside, you know, look from that side of it. But this week I definitely have felt like I've tanked a little bit. And my optimism has been sucked out of me. And my box of life hacks, I'm going into my life hack box and I'm looking at it and going, some of them need a bit of oil. Some of them are looking a bit tired, you know. But then I've taken a step back and gone, that's all right. That's all right. It's okay. You're allowed to feel like that, you know. You're allowed to feel a bit shitty. You know, you're not, you're not, everything's always going to be awesome. And sometimes you need a bit of time to reboot from it. And I try and pass that on to my kids, you know, because I think the younger generation are living in a life that's super connected and everything needs to be done and delivered now and everything's awesome. It's not, you know, and I think if you can build resilience into these kids at an early age, my word, with the support that they've got around them, you know, in the world that we live in, and people can go, do you know what, UK shit and it's this and it's that, but it still, there's still a lot of good there that's supporting you. If you can build into that resilience, my word, the ability of what they can do is incredible. But it's knowing, like education's teaching it, this must be done this way, and it must be done exactly right. No, it doesn't. And sometimes shit goes wrong. But how do you deal with it when it goes? The soft skills that you're being taught, those life skills to deal with it. I think if you're doing that and you're going to deliver that, I think that's incredible, because I don't think there's many people doing that. You know, it's that self-belief and knowing that people believe in them. And also our self-belief and believing in ourselves, you know. Sometimes it's all right for that belief to waver a little bit and for your toolbox to be a bit smashed up, your life hack's toolbox to be a little bit smashed up.
We mentioned about who you are now, and this question to both of you now, and it's a pretty difficult question, I think, to answer for a lot of people. So not so much what do you do, i.e. public speaker, author, coach, for example. How would you describe yourself? You know, how do you describe yourself to yourself?
Go on, Luke, I'll let you do that one first.
I would say I'm a guy that wants to bring kindness to the world by contributing with the skills that he's got, with all that he knows, and every day is a pursuit of achieving more skills, more knowledge to help more people. And I'm just a guy that one day when I'm not here, I want people to go, do you know what? That guy really helped me.
Yeah,
in some way, whatever it was, that guy really helped me. I want my kids to be queued up in a shop. When my kids are queued up in a shop, I want them to go, Was your dad Luke Staton? Yeah, what a guy he was. He did so much for the community, he did so much for people. And that's what I want. And that's what every day I live to. And if you live to it, hopefully you'll achieve it. And I don't want it to just be when I'm gone either. While I'm here, I want to be that person that's doing that builds relationships with guys like you, because you believe in the same thing. And when you live a certain philosophy, you do attract like-minded people. So when you live it, I think the aura that you carry it, you start to bring people in that are similar to you too.
Yeah, I totally agree.
What about you, Dad?
Totally agree. Oh, I'm a dad and an husband. That's what, at the moment, I would always put that first. And I know that might sound a bit meh, whatever you want to say, but I am. But also purpose to basically help people, you know, to be there to help people. If I can just do a little bit of something in a day to help them, then absolutely awesome. And I love what you said then, Luke. I love what you just said then, you know. And we have talked a little bit about this on previous pods about legacy, you know, and a legacy for a lot of people always equates to stuff, things that you're leaving behind, houses and money and things like that. I would love, like you, Luke, I would love for us to be remembered as, do you know what, I remember when we did that and Dave saw and we did that and we went on that, the experiences we have, and that would be the one for me. Do you know what I mean? I totally agree. Sometimes, you know, I'll be honest with you, sometimes I worry that I should, you know, be more commercially driven and maybe chase some of those things a bit more, but they just don't appeal to me anymore. You know, I'd rather have the right amount of stuff that affords me just the right amount of cash that gives me the time to do all the other things. The most valuable thing to me is time. It really, really, really is. You know, I don't want to be working 5, 6, 7 days a week to pay for a 100 grand car on drive or a mortgage that's running me at £2,000 or £3,000 a month, or whatever that is. I'd rather, you know, just to pay more and more tax into a system. I'd rather be doing less that gives me time to do something other than that, some time for myself to do what I do my training and things like that, and then give for other people. You know, could you come and help us? You know, we're moving this or we're doing that, or we want to go and cut these trees down or dig this garden over, or we want to go and work down. Oh, man, book me in for some of that. and I'll give you as much time as I possibly can.
Like it.
What about you, Andy?
Oh, I thought I was going to get away with that. I was hoping Dave was going to carry on talking, and then you completely forget the question. Who am I? Hello, my name's Andy. I think we often answer this, and you did this a bit there, Luke, is like what you want to be remembered by, you know, how do you want to be remembered by others? And I think, you know, you both spoke about that. So for me, I want to be remembered as a kind human being who spoke from the heart. I've been called by other people a savior of lost souls, that I can help people find their soul.
That's
again.
A pretty big statement. That's a big statement, that, mate.
It's not just once I've heard that either. So it's, you know, it's a really lovely piece of feedback. You know, it's something, you know, I feel quite emotional about it at times thinking about. And I also like to connect people. I just love to connect people.
It's a t-shirt.
Is that another branding exercise for you then?
There's a t-shirt in that. Savior of souls.
Is there?
Yeah. Might have Sons of Anarchy written on the front. Might have Sons of Anarchy written on the front of it, or something quite metally gothic. But yeah. Sorry, mate. Go on.
Mm. No, and the other piece of feedback I've heard, and I kind of like this one as well, is that I'm a connector of brilliant people. I don't want to connect absolute idiots to other idiots. I just want to connect brilliant people to brilliant people. And that's it. And I don't even want to be remembered for that. It's the right thing to do. We often talk about values and virtues, and you know, you've both said that, you know, you won't be remembered for, you know, for creating, you know, happy memories with people. I think that's a virtue. I think that is actually what we all want in life. I think everybody wants to be remembered positively. I might be wrong on that, but that's me anyway. I just want to be remembered positively, being a kind human being who can maybe help people to reconnect with the soul and spirit.
So the feedback of support, helping people, to give you that phenomenal words of you know, you help people with lost souls, you're a savior. What have you done that's created that feedback?
Similar to yourself, Luke, I did a TEDx, and I felt probably a similar kind of drive to yourself. And obviously I've not asked you this question, but doing that TEDx for me was like, I've been through an awful experience which people don't talk about, and I want people to hear that. It wasn't for my benefit, but for the benefit of other people. And the more I practiced that talk in front of other people, I went to a boxing gym and practiced it. I went to, you know, different events and practiced this talk, just trying to get it better and better. And the feedback was often, it was like you were telling my story. You know, so guys would be saying, it's like, you know, you've lived my life, and you were telling people what I was living and feeling and thinking. So to get that, it was, you know, almost instant. As soon as I did the TEDx and when the actual live one in Bollington and then recorded version, I was then receiving lots of messages just to say that, you know, it's almost like, you know, you've rekindled my spirit again now. You know, I feel like there is a way forward. It's called Can We Fix Our Own Mental Illness? The story is just, it's probably a very, very common story of somebody who worked too hard. You used the word relentless before, Luke. I was relentless trying to achieve things for my family, at the expense of my family, unfortunately. Yeah. It was, you know, so my story is a very, very common one. I burnt out, I had a breakdown. I almost killed myself as a consequence, because I was measuring myself, something what you mentioned before, Dave, I was measuring myself on what I did and what I had and the things that I could create for my family. And I completely missed the entire point by me trying to create more wealth and have more status and more currency. I was losing currency and I was losing status in my own life. At the expense of doing it for other people, working for a bank of all places. And actually the currency I needed to develop was that of love with my family. And I just didn't spend time with my family, or actually I couldn't look myself in the mirror. You mentioned about looking yourself in the mirror, Luke. I couldn't look myself in the mirror. I hated mirrors. I had to walk past quickly or do that. It's, you know, I just didn't like who I was. I was driven by the wrong motivation. So my motivation now is something completely different. It's now about legacy, as we mentioned before, Dave. It is about, I want to be remembered for being that kind human being. And when I'm coaching people, I'll often, this is probably not pure coaching. It's probably more mentoring. I'll go back to those experiences when I feel it's relevant to the person I'm speaking with and communicating with, and ask them, does it resonate with them? And often it does. And the outcome, what's the outcome they're looking for? What do you want to be remembered for? Something we spoke about in the past is, you know, imagine you're writing yourself, you're 80 years old and you're writing yourself a note to yourself, what am I proudest of in my life? I'm constantly thinking about that. I'm constantly thinking, what do I want to be remembered for? Not by just by other people, but what do I want to be proud of when I check out?
Did you keep your family, or was the sacrifice too great?
Not kept my family. I, that's what I'm so grateful about. You know, we've kind of spoke about this in the past. You know, I apologise to my children, Brandon and Kirsten. They're great. You know, 23 and 20. You know, they're two of the most amazing human beings in the world. And a few years ago, I apologised to them and told them about, you know, the breakdown I had and the fact that I even considered ending my own life. And, you know, I was really embarrassed about it and apologised for not being present in their lives. And neither of them even remembered that I wasn't present in their lives. I think it was more me beating myself up more than anything. Just being around was enough. And my wife, Nikki, you know, she stood by me quite rightly as well, because I'm a pretty good catch, to be fair. So she stood by me. And and you know, she helped me get through it. You know, she listened, she didn't judge, and she gave me all the space in the world to get well again. So that was a big journey, but it could have been completely different. You know, probably hours away from the unthinkable. That comfortable silence there.
Do you know what, mate? It's scary that, you know. I think how things can evolve till you get to a point, and it, you know, and it could be all different levels of triggers, whatever that point is. But to get to that point, as in literally, like, that is all or nothing, you know. And I don't doubt that, you know, if you're on that journey as a human being, we are trying to prevent it, aren't we? Prevent it. But the mind is such a powerful thing. You know, if you're out laying bricks or you've got a physical job, your body gets tired. And 9 times out of 10, you could probably you go to bed and you fall asleep. I think when this gets going, the mind gets going, you may fall asleep early doors because you're completely shattered. But when 2 o'clock in the morning, when this gears back up, it's a pretty, pretty dark space, you know? And I think, you know, us as middle-aged men, I would imagine a lot of middle-aged men have experienced, women as well, but obviously our audience is predominantly male, have experienced that, you know. And it's hopefully being able to have conversations and be more open in conversations and speak to people about things. You know, verbalizing things make things a lot easier, or be having at least someone within your network that will listen, who can have a non-emotional attachment to it, to go, do you know what? How about this or how about that? That you don't get to that point. But as blokes, don't really talk about much, or we don't, you know, we don't really put it out there a lot, do we? We tend to keep a lot of the things in, you know.
I think you're right. You're absolutely right. And you probably have your own opinion on this, Luke, is that speaking is only half of it. It's being heard and people listening at the same time. So your message, your story, you know, your aims and beliefs, etc., Luke, said in the wrong space, probably just wouldn't resonate with certain people. There may be certain people in the point of their life, it might as well be a different language completely. For me, you know, I'd love to hear, who is it, you know, who is it that you speak to, Luke, not just at school, but, you know, is it either a certain demographic, an age group, or is it a certain type of human being that benefit more from your story?
It's a great question. And just as you was talking there, kind of, when I referred earlier about, you know, moving from a elite football player with all the dreams to living a nightmare shifting bricks, it happened to me again a decade and a bit later as well. So I went through all of that, started again, built my life up, and it all come crashing down once again. So I did lose everything again. But because I'd been through it once, I felt it was actually a lot more painful the second time than the first time, because you know, family was there, family was gone, business gone, people, you know, when you owe people money, it's not a nice position to be in. And it was a real tough spot for me for a period of time. And so I went through it all again, and it was like, God, what am I doing that is kind of recreating this drama? Not drama is the wrong word, this trauma, this pain. And really what it was is I was just a young kid that went from wanting to excel in something to become something, didn't work, always felt like I was trying to prove myself again and make up for what had happened last time, to the extent that I would literally be gone 18 hours a day, every single day. I was that relentlessly focused individual that I just didn't want my kids and my family to go through the financial challenges that, you know, I went through as a kid. And my mum and dad, you know, they was phenomenal parents, still are. They never really had any money to do the things that they wanted to do. So I was chasing the wrong thing, and it happened to me again. And after that, it was like, I've really got to take stock of this and look at it. And what I decided to do was kind of share a lot of the challenges and experiences that I'd been through and the lessons that I'd learned. And I started to put stuff out there on social media, kind of about the way I saw life, my philosophy, and how it had helped me rebuild multiple times. And I always remember that this is the answer to your question, is that one lady on Facebook, she sent me a message and she said, Luke, she wrote it in the comments on the Facebook post. She said, Luke, I've followed you like for years, and I used to watch your posts, and I used to think to myself, like, this guy is a bit of a dick, really. You know, she was being very open, which I was appreciative of. She was like, I followed your posts, read them. I used to think, who is he? You know, look at him, you know, talking about this stuff. He's a dick. And then, but she carried on underneath. She said, however, I've realized that it wasn't you. It was the position I was in at that point. I wasn't ready to hear it.
Yeah.
She said, now I've changed things in my life. I can resonate and I enjoy the message that you're talking about. Whereas before, when you're in a painful situation and got a pain point in life, the last thing you want is someone coming along going, you know, get out there in the morning, go in a cold shower or whatever it is, you know. You're like, go away. Because I know when my life wasn't very good, I found it difficult to accept positive affirmations from the external world. I used to think, it's all right for them. It's all right for them. They don't know what it's like to be me. And that's when you start to feel sorry for yourself and it doesn't work. So I actually realized that I will be me and I will share me and I'll be the best that I can with all that I know. And if people attach to the message, great, I'm here. If not, that's fine too. And they've got a choice to listen, watch and follow or not. So the people that buy into my message, you know, when you think about this, Andy, right? So a good friend of mine called David Baldwin breaks his back at 19, football career over, enters his dad's business. At that point, it's doing £1 million a year turnover. It's got 25 employees. It's got one office. He joins his dad's empire and he says, Dad, I think I can help you grow your business. And his dad was like, okay, son, whatever, really. You know, you're 19, 20, 21. You've never been involved in business before. You've been a footballer, but let's see what happens. So fast forward 15, 16 years later, they went from 1 million turnover to 250 million turnover. They went from one office to 100 offices, 25 employees to 3,500 employees. And then they sold out to a private equity firm and secured his generation of family wealth forever. Continued running the company for him, left the company, a year later started again. Now, when you're asking me what kind of individuals want to listen to me and want me involved, he took me on a UK tour when he ran that company to speak to nearly 1,000 of his employees over a 6-week period.
Good grief.
And he said to me, he said, Luke, how much will it be to take you to as many locations as I can for you to deliver one of your seminars around empowerment, inspiration, helping them personally be the best they can be, not about the company, about the human being? How much would it be? And I told him, he was like, no problem, let's do it. Can we do two some days and then we'll travel to the next place? So I'm with this guy. He's carrying my train tickets and my airplane tickets and we're getting on the plane to Glasgow, and he's on his phone, and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, you got a 45-minute flight. So my mind was, I'll just chill out for a little bit, 45 minutes. Straight on his phone, I'm like, what are you doing? He said, I've got 100 profit and loss accounts to read. I've got a board meeting in a couple of days that I've got to report back to the board. He said, so I go through 100 of them, spot things, send it back to the partner of that office and get them to check it and look at it. And he said, that's what I do. And the guy's mind was on a whole new level of entrepreneurship and drive and ambition. And I love being sat next to him. Now, what gave me more self-belief, when you talk about belief earlier and confidence and, you know, and growing your own self-worth and self-esteem, I'm sat there thinking, if this guy grows a company from that to that, and he believes in me and my message enough to travel all around the UK while he's got a family full of four kids, you know, he's taken his time to take me to speak to his people. If he thinks I'm good enough, I believe I'm good enough. So I got confidence from that. And what was really interesting, when I walked into the first room, out of probably, let's say the first room, I'd say, let's say 50 plus people in the room. So each office sent 10 people, five officers, 10 people to one seminar. It was a 3-hour seminar. I did 2 hours. For the last hour, I did a Q&A with the man himself to share more of him, like this, more of himself, the challenges he's been through, the entrepreneur journey, the break in his back, the failure in football. And 1 minute his wife's calling him a footballer, next minute he's an accountant. He doesn't have the same ringtone, does it? You know? So he's talking about all this stuff. And it went so well. It went so well. But what I realized really quickly, I go in the room, and I said to everybody, I said to David, I said, are you sure these guys want me here? And he was like, he went, I don't think they will, because it's 8:30 in the morning. They're about to get up early, travel. He said, but give it your best. And off he went. He introduced me and he left me to it. So then I said to the room, right, I looked at them, and me being optimistic, I'm thinking they're being paid to be there, really. You know, it's a morning off work because I've got an opportunity to come and listen to me and David. Why wouldn't they want to be there? That was my mind. And I realized that maybe I would have not been like that if I hadn't been who I am now back in the day. So I said to them, just out of interest, guys, who in this room last night said to their husband, wife, grandma, granddad, son, daughter, I cannot wait to get up early tomorrow, go to a hotel, and listen to Luke Staton with David Baldwin. And they're all looking around like, is this guy real? And I said, who actually said last night, I could really be doing without this? You know, what's the point? I've got loads of emails to do. I'm going to get backlogged. And they all started laughing. And out of 50 people, there was probably 2 to 3 that said genuinely they wanted to be there. And they was the younger generation, because they're thinking of how to improve, how to get better. Guys that had been there 30, 40 years, they know everything. Like, they know everything. What could I or Dave? And I'm thinking, right, you've got a guy here that owns this company that thinks it's worth coming to, but you don't think it is. And it's like, how can you not look at that guy and go, if he thinks this is worth listening to, I'm gonna listen to this, because that guy is on a whole new stratosphere of what he's accomplished. And one guy came up to me. I always remember it. He came up to me at the end of the seminar. He was probably in his late 50s. And he was wanting to make it obvious that he didn't want to be there, like the kid in class. So this is where my work in schools and adults really works well, because adults portray childlike behavior a lot of the time. So this guy wanted to show me that he didn't want to be there. If you don't want to be there, that's fine. But why do you want to show me that you don't want to be there? You want to show me that you don't want to be there because really you're searching for something, but you're not sure what it is. And actually, he sat there side on, not really engaging with me. And I'm thinking all the time, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you involved in this somehow. And as he sat there, I could catch him. He kept looking at me, and then I'd catch him with a story, and he'd like quickly realize he was getting drawn in and quickly want to get out of it. But as the 2 hours went on, it's difficult to not allow good energy with no ulterior motive other than to help you kind of throw it away. It's difficult to not go, do you know what? The guy's all right. He's laughing at himself. He calls himself this. He's having a bit of a joke. He's real. He's from a certain type of background. You know, he's not stood here saying he's a multimillionaire, successful entrepreneur. He's not saying anything that he's not. He's actually all right. So I carried on. At the end of it, this guy comes up to me. I always remember it. And this is when I realized to never change who you are, potentially change who you're with, but never change who you are. So I'm in this room and he comes up to me at the end. He goes, Luke, he went, do you know what? He said, so sorry about that today. I'm like, why? What do you mean? What are you sorry for? And he goes, well, in the first half an hour, he said, when you were saying who was on the car on the way in moaning about, he said, that was me. And I'm thinking, how does this guy know that I was saying that? He said, everything you were saying, I was the guy that I wouldn't want my kids to walk into school with the mentality that I walked into here with. He said, I was that guy. It was like he was talking to me. And he said to me, he said, do you know the reason I was like that, Luke? I'm like, no. I said, but I'd love to know. So this guy's in his late 50s, right? So he goes, when I was in my early 20s, he said, I went to one of these seminars and it was rubbish. And he said, and since then, I've never, ever engaged with anything like this. And he said, I just can't believe that. I've been so blinkered in my thinking because of one negative experience. And then he's like, Luke, my daughter plays hockey. Like, what's your thoughts around this? And so his mind went from, this is going to be crap, I don't want to be here, to Luke, how could you help me more? And his mind started to do this. And what I love is that every single one of us, no matter who we are, we have an opportunity to open our mind just a little bit more, to let something in, to learn something more, to often become more, to do more. However, first thing is you've got to get rid of that ego and go, do you know what? I don't know a lot about a lot of stuff. I really don't. So I'm going to ask people like you that know lots more than me, and please share it with me. And when you're humble and you're self-aware like that, I think I find it easier to connect now with more people than I ever did, because they realize I'm not saying I'm something I'm not. I'm just a real person that wants to do good.
I love that story. And it's so relatable, because I think we've probably all been that person who's got an ego, who for some reason doesn't want to be told, particularly somebody who they don't know much about, and maybe somebody who's younger than me as well. You know, what have you got to teach me? But it reminds me of a quote from the Tao Te Ching, which is, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And I think it's really, really prominent sometimes, is that I could listen to that story two or three times in my life and it may not mean jack to me, but on one day it'll mean everything, and it could be life-changing, that story. And I think that's what it takes sometimes, you know, call it serendipity, absolutely, or, you know, juxtaposition, whatever. I'm not going to overthink it. Sometimes at the right time, something special will happen.
Yeah.
We spoke a lot about beliefs and aims about this. And another word for that is credo. And I can't help but seeing that you've got a bit of a logo on your on your left breast there. It says credo and a butterfly. Rumor has it that's a book. Could you tell me just a little bit about that?
So credo is Latin, and the Angela Meads, the publisher, actually, she came up with the idea of calling it credo, because it intrigues the mind to think, what is it? So straight away, if you think of you go, what does that mean? You're more inquisitive. And I think what we do with young people, because the book is written for young people. However, since it's come out, I'm getting loads of feedback from adults that have read it. And like you've just said perfectly there, Andy, if you're in a place that you're looking for something to improve something, you see messages everywhere. Like you see them all the time. It might be somebody that was kind to you in a coffee shop. You're looking for it. You're seeking it. So in an adult or a child, or an adult reads it to a younger child, the message is the same for all of us. And the book was all around helping young people to realize that we've all got that butterfly deep within us. And it's up to us as human beings to protect it from external factors, from words, from actions of external people. And if we can, you can see the butterfly, like the butterfly on the book, it's half of it's bright and half of it's dark and gray. And the idea and the philosophy throughout the through line of the story is that if we accept and believe that we've got an inner butterfly that's got the ability and potential to fly and flourish and go wherever it wants to go, all we have to do is take care of it with the way that we live, the way that we think, the way that we behave. And if anybody else tries to get to us, that butterfly lives in our heart and nobody's touching that. Nobody's going to damper my butterfly. Nobody's going to squash my butterfly before it has chance to fly and flourish, because my butterfly is going to stay bright and it's going to go wherever I want it to go. And the story is about a kid like me with a dream to become a young sportsman that goes to school, teacher invites him on a school trip, shy. A lot of the story is the real through line of my childhood. However, the character's not me. It's a fictional character called Stan. The young boy is shy, quite anxious, doesn't like to talk to people, covers his eyes with his hair, but he's got a dream to become something. And the butterfly is what gives him the courage to pursue his dream, because it lives in his heart and he does all that he can to keep it bright and beautiful. And you imagine us as adults that we thought to ourselves, I want to feel good. Everybody in life, no matter who it is, whatever clients come to me, whatever workshop, seminar, talk that I do, people want to feel good. We all want to feel good, because if you feel good, you do great stuff. So protecting how you feel is the most valuable thing you can ever do with how you eat, sleep, move, who you interact with, what you read, what you listen to, the places that you go, the things that you see, the conversations that you have, the goals that you've got. And if you can keep your energy in that bright, beautiful state, I believe you can have a phenomenal life. Because if I died after this podcast, and I speak very deeply about this, but if I come off this podcast now and I die and I walk out there and this is the last podcast that I've ever done, I know that I've given you guys everything that I've got while I've been on this phone call. I've given you everything. My butterfly inside is bright and beautiful. If you came on here and started to come at me with stuff that, you know, made me uncomfortable for whatever reason, I'm like, these guys aren't getting to this. Like, this butterfly is staying colourful, because when I come off this phone, I'm going to be FaceTiming my daughter out there and I want her to get the best version of her dad. So I'm not going to allow anybody to affect this butterfly. You're not going to get to this. You are not getting to it. And when you really think that deeply about your butterfly, how can I keep it bright and blue, beautiful to go wherever it wants to go? And I had one audience once, a group of young kids. It was the most beautiful thing. The story was written in my mind on the way to a primary school 7 years ago, because I wanted to talk about something different. So as I'm driving to this primary school, I'm thinking, how can I engage a four-year-old to an 11-year-old for 45 to 60 minutes? You know, I want to be more engaged. I want to tell a story. And the story of the butterfly just came to me as I was driving my car. It was like, butterfly lands on the boy's bedroom window.
No way.
Comes into his room, lands on his chest. But because the boy's unhappy, the butterfly goes from bright to dull. But the boy wants the butterfly to be bright, so starts to laugh and joke. And the butterfly all of a sudden starts to flutter and become more colourful. So I start to tell this story to 300 primary school kids. And they're all like, Luke, how did the butterfly get through the window? Luke, how? And I thought, the child's mind is essential that as adults we keep that child's mind. Because a child doesn't say to me, how did the butterfly... No, sorry. A child doesn't say to me, there's no way, Luke, a butterfly would have got through your bedroom window. An adult would say that. But the kid just goes, what colour was it, Luke? How did it work? And like, how did the butterfly get in your shirt pocket, Luke, to go to school? Where adults will go, that can never happen. So we become very cynical, but the metaphor is the same for whatever age we are. And a little kid, little kids at the end of the talk, 300 of them sat there, and I said to them, imagine now your butterfly is sat inside your shirt pocket. I said, everybody close your eyes, put your hand on your heart, and think about your butterfly, and just put a little bit of pressure on it so it sinks deep into your heart, and that's where it lives forever. And everybody in the room, it was unbelievable. All the kids are closing their eyes and they're feeling this butterfly in their heart. And as we're leaving the room, this little kid, probably 7 or 8, comes up to me and he goes, Luke, he goes, does your butterfly still live in your pocket? I said, no. I said, my butterfly lives in my heart. And that's what inspires me to keep doing things like this. He went, thanks, Luke. And I left that room, wrote the story down. 6 years later, the book comes out. So that's kind of where it came from.
I love that.
Credo means believe. Credo means believe in Latin.
Gotcha. Yeah. I love that. That's amazing. I don't know your voice is holding up, because I know you're not very well, are you, at the moment, Luke?
Yeah, I'm not well enough to do what I wanted to do in terms of running up the hills, but I'm well enough to sit here and have a great conversation with you guys. And so, yeah, I mean, there's levels of what you can do when you're not well, isn't there?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're well enough for this anyway. And I'm glad you feel it's a great conversation as well. It's almost like from nowhere to somewhere as well with something else that I'd checked on your social media feed. But I am that stalker. What's nowhere to somewhere?
So that's a podcast I created a number of years ago, From Nowhere to Somewhere, people that have gone from something to something and how they done it. Because I'm fascinated by the likes of David Baldwin that I talked about earlier. How do you go from 19 breaking your back to in your mid-30s and securing your family's generational wealth forever? How do you do that? And I'm just fascinated by people's stories. I love people. I love stories, as you can probably tell. Every question that you ask me is a story, because that's how I remember my answers and that's how I connect it. Mm. So people remember stories. And if you remember a story, you often feel something from the story that you connect it to doing something with it. So when I sit with these guys, and it's anybody from sports people, entrepreneurs, it can be doctors, nurses, construction workers. It's not about how much money you've made. It's about how did you go from living in Iran at 18, coming to the UK, and now you've got your own construction company of 200 plus people. How do you do that? How do you do a degree when you don't even speak English in an English university? What process did you go through? Because I can't comprehend it, because I didn't have the ability to do it in my own language. And this guy comes from Iran and he does it. So I'm listening to these people going, "Why, I'm not doing enough." Like, honestly, I come off the podcast, I think I need to raise my aspirations a bit more. My aspirations are too low. I'm just here. I'm too safe. I need to go higher. I need to go a little bit more. I need to book in Waterstones, not just a local bookshop. I need to step it up a little bit. So I leave these I started recording a podcast because I was speaking to so many wonderful people and just thinking, like you guys said to me on off air, I was thinking, I wish everybody else could hear this conversation, because I'm having to regurgitate it to the next person. But if I record these great conversations, then everybody else gets the benefit of listening to them too. And there's no better learning platform. There's no excuse now to not learn about anything. You can learn about anything on podcasts, audiobooks, YouTube. You don't really even need to pay any money to learn now. You don't have to sign up to any courses. You don't necessarily have to go to school, university. You could listen to somebody that's done something that you want to do, and you could just take all that information. But you've got to be prepared to sit down, watch, listen, study, and apply. And the apply bit is the bit that I think a lot of people fall down. You could give someone a blueprint of how to become super lean, healthy, and fit, which you know works, but lots of people still won't follow it, will they?
It's absolutely true. You know, we're all geniuses when we're watching YouTube, aren't we? But we've actually got to do something about it. We've got to take that first step and continue, as you said, to be relentless, no matter what, you know, whatever that aim, dream, and goal is. I think we often miss the lessons in life when they're too late. And for me, this has been an education as well. We often talk about, you know, what have we learned on this podcast, and I've been making notes all the way through it. So thank you for sharing these lessons with us, Luke. Dave, what have you got from this conversation we've had today? What are your lessons you'd like to remember?
Oh, man. I'm up for a bit of change, I think. Definitely up for a bit of change. I had a really interesting conversation yesterday with a guy who I've not seen for 20 years, you know, worked with him 20 years ago, and saw him yesterday, and we sat there talking about what we did 20 years ago, and just listening to him where he was talking about us as individuals and the business and things like that. And I was like, wow. At the time, I don't think we really realized who we were and what we were doing. And I think we were just like, we didn't realize how good we were at that time, but we were a lot younger. You know, we had the drive for that. And now, again, you know, it just feels the right time to make some changes. A lot of the time, a lot of the things that we've wanted to do in recent time, we've not been able to do because it's just not, the fit hasn't been there with regards to, a lot of it can be family related. I think I'm ready for a change of scenery location wise, you know, and listening to what we've talked about today, you know, without losing who we are as individuals. I think that can evolve as well. I'm ready to evolve as a person as well. I want to make some changes there, you know. So it's been, I felt like I've taken stock today, which has been nice to do.
At this point, I'm usually engaging with Phil. I just want to shout out to Phil. I love you, brother, and can't wait to see you very, very soon. And absolutely, really missed you today because, you know, Friday's the day we speak. So there's, you know, there's a bit of a gap there today. So hope you get through the work that you need to get through today. But to be fair, off the bench, Luke Staten comes
Bosch.
In. It's
super
like
Bosch.
Getting Ronaldo or Messi off the bench, isn't it? That's you know, it doesn't get much better than that. So you've still got it, Luke. Really appreciate it.
So many
lessons that we could learn here, and I'd love to hear what our listeners have taken from this, whether it's just one lesson or multiple lessons.
I think David, since the time I've known him, he's brought up that commercial conversation a number of times, and you talked about it as well today. And I think what happens is, and I'm generalizing here, I think what happens is lots of people go through a lot of stuff and realize they was chasing the wrong thing. However, I think sometimes they was chasing a bit of the right thing the wrong way, right? So because what happens then is people start to go the opposite and go, commercial, I'm not bothered about it. It's not about the money. It's not about the things. However, your son gets ill tomorrow and you've got to find a way to pay for him to do something to save him. You're going to wish that you had a more of a commercial mind. Now, my look at this, when I was younger, yes, I chased the wrong thing the wrong way because that was at the sacrifice of everything. I think you can have both. I really believe it. Because that guy like David Baldwin, he's got both. He's mastered both. He's still got his family intact. He's got a beautiful everything. And he's financially very commercially driven, very successful. And I think sometimes, and I'm only saying this to the listeners, because I think sometimes we decide that it's not about the money. It's not about being commercial. But actually, it's essential that we do have that part of a brain, or we can't pay the people that we love and work with, and we can't facilitate opportunities for other people around us too. And there's a conversation there around, like, us not going too far the opposite way, because the more money you want to earn, often the more skills you've got to get, the more value you've got to bring, the more formidable a human being you have to be. So your personal self grows as you want to generate more revenue. And I think there's totally nothing wrong with that. I think it's a real admirable thing, as long as it's not done the wrong way. And I think that's where sometimes we get a little bit lost. I see lots of people doing it the wrong way, but the ones doing it the right way, they're like, why wouldn't I want to earn another 5 million? Why not, though? Because I can give a million to that charity there. I can give 500,000 there. I can do whatever I want to do. I'm not going to sacrifice my wife or my kids, but why not? If I can be that person, why wouldn't I do it?
Yeah.
And I think that's a great outlook, because sometimes I think when we've been hurt and scarred, and David, since I've known him, always brings up that he went after it. It weren't what he wanted, but that doesn't mean that thing that he went after was the wrong thing. It's often how we went after it might have been the wrong way sometimes. That's all I wanted to kind of open up, really.
Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you. King Cod, Dave, do you want to talk us out of the show? Tell us what our listeners need to do.
Guys, it's been absolutely awesome. Luke, mate, I've known you for a bit now. Really appreciate you coming on. As always, if you like what you hear, give us a like, give us a share, give us a follow. If you want to get in touch about anything, if you want to come on the pod or you want to have a conversation, suggest anything for conversations with regards to, you know, what the episodes could be about, drop us an email at hello@talkingcod.com. But yeah, thanks. It's been ace. Been quality, guys.
Amazing. Lovely. Thank you. Lovely to meet you, Luke. Love you both. Love you, Phil, if you're listening.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.